I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
So this happened either last year or earlier this year, before lockdown, I think. It is probably going to be short, as this is the only experience that I have ever really considered odd. So, we own a cabin up in the mountains of Colorado. It is nice and is in a neighborhood that sits on the edge of the woods. That is about as specific as I am going to get. So my dad would sometimes joke with us about gargoyles up there. I feel like this is relevant because of the incident in question. I think a gargoyle might be involved. So, it is late one night, around 10 or something, and I'm on my phone. I share a room with my younger sibling, and they were asleep. Anyways, I am startled by this loud bang in the cabin feeling like it was shaking. It most certainly was not a hallucination, as both of my parents came upstairs, and I started yelling in confusion. It was a one single bang noise. Maybe like thunder. It did not wake up my siblings, but I certainly heard it. I should also note that I sleep up in the loft, so it is basically the top floor, whereas my parents sleep in the basement. Either way, my parents heard it too, so I was not alone. I had asked them what they thought it was, and they had said it was probably an earthquake or something. I did not agree with them, because it felt like I had come from above, like the roof. Again, I could be wrong. I have never been in a place during an earthquake before, so I guess I really wouldn't know. I should also note that we didn't talk to any of our neighbors as far as I'm concerned about the incident, so nothing could really come of it. The thing that I kind of consider evidence to my theory is that sometime later, from what I recall, when we had someone look at the roof for insurance purposes, I recall my parents mentioning the inspector saying there were indentations on the roof, as if somebody was walking up there in metal boots or something of the like. If anybody else has ever experienced something like this, I'd love to hear it down in the comments below. This story happened to me several years ago when I was in the fifth grade, so forgive me if it's not particularly good. My memory is not the best. I was camping with my friend Tim, and his brother Michael, whose family had just moved on to a rather large plot of land coated in dense woodland and lots of little streams. As we were young and anxious, we wanted to explore the woods to find a nice little place to build a fort and hang out. So, we headed out into the woods with only sleeping bags and some backpacks with snacks, flashlights, and some warm clothes should it get too cold. We found a nice little clearing that had flat ground, save for the far side that ran steeply down to meet the creek. We set up camp here, and had went swimming in the creek where we found some strange animal footprints that looked very close to a human. But these prints were smaller, and had only three toes. We thought this was weird at first, but quickly it had left our thoughts as we returned to splashing each other and having fun. Come sunset, we were all laying down in the grass watching as the colorful sky darkened and the night's beginning, when we heard a noise coming from the side of the clearing that our camp was at. We were sitting on the hill, so we could not be seen by anything that was on the flat part of the clearing. We brushed it off at first. We thought it was probably a deer or something. But then we heard the unmistakable sound of fabric tearing and sniffing. We cautiously looked over the top of the slope and saw a small dark gray creature, no larger than a chimpanzee, walking around our campsite. I was in shock at first, but I began to grow more and more terrified with every passing moment, till Michael threw a rock into the woods behind the creature, and it scurried off back into the woods. We waited for a couple of minutes before we got up from our cover behind the slope. All our bags had been ripped open, and all of our snacks were now gone or thrown about. On the ground, we found footprints all in the mud around our campsite. I got chills down my back and suggested that we leave, but Michael and Tim said they wanted to stay because whatever it was had left, and that it was probably just a deformed coyote or something. I guess I gave in to their pleas, and we decided to stay out, and sometime later, we had a fire going once again. It was around 10 p.m. when we heard branches snapping in the tops of the trees nearest our camp. We looked up and saw that thing once again, trying its best to hide after it made noise. We were all pale-faced and decided to run into the woods away from our camp. I heard that thing behind us, but didn't want to look back. I ended up slipping a glance back, though, eventually. It was not far behind us, so I yelled to stay together so that if it caught up, we could fight it better. Despite my best efforts, we ended up getting split up, and soon I found myself back in the clearing. I had managed to do a full circle back but heard brush breaking behind me, so I dove down the slope and rolled into the creek, trying my best to be quiet. I tucked myself just under the incline of the drop into the creek, and I just tried to slow my breathing as best as I could. I was terrified, cut up, and bruised from my chase through the woods, and now soaking wet. I held my breath as I heard something making its way down the slope towards me. I heard a soft hissing sound and a growl as whatever it was ran back up the slope towards my camp. I sat there for what felt like hours, but was probably only 15 minutes or so, when there was a large splash next to me. I thought it was done for, but I saw it was Tim. What are you doing here? I asked. I came looking for you and Michael, Tim said out of breath. I haven't seen Michael since back in the woods, I replied worriedly. I thought he was with you. Tim was about to speak when we heard someone making their way through the clearing towards the slope. I thought I was going to be forced to hold my breath again, but Tim stood up and quickly ran to the other side of the creek to escape. I saw his shape fade into the darkness quickly, and I was about to follow when I saw that gray creature jump up into the water just feet away and give chase. It smelled like death, and I could see it well for a short instant. Its flesh seemed to wriggle and squirm like there were worms just under the peeling flesh, and its bony spine looked more like a protrusion than a bone. I was terrified, now more than ever, and my fight-or-flight instinct kicked in. I know it sounds terrible, but I used this chance to get out of the water and run back to Tim and Michael's house, not too far from where we were camping. Right as I got out of the clearing, I saw Michael. He was ducking behind a tree, and I called his name in a hushed tone. He looked at me, and I saw pure relief over his face, and he stood up. "Where's Tim?" he asked worriedly. He ran the opposite way, and the thing took off after him. I said with tears in my eyes. How long had I been crying? I thought to myself, when suddenly I was knocked off my feet by something. It was Tim, and we all nodded in agreement and ran toward the house. We did not know if we were being chased, but at this point we did not care. We just wanted to get into a safe place. We made it back to their house with no problems, and we all slept restlessly on the floor in Michael's room. This is anticlimactic, but we went back to that place and none of our stuff was there, and we never saw the creature again. I have not talked with Tim or Michael in a couple of years, but I want to talk to them about that night sometime soon if I can.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsafe the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsafe the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
It was near the end of 2018, around November, I believe, so it was damp and cold out, but nonetheless still comfortable for me, when I got a call from my friend Joe. He wanted to come up to my house and stay a few days to get out of the city, so to speak, because I live up in the mountains, the usual middle-of-nowhere type old wooden house with my mom, who rarely was home for more than 2 to 3 hours at a time due to her job and the mountains of Tennessee. Can have some pretty backwoods areas. We have neighbors, but they are a good distance from us, so we don't really know them all that well. Enough details for now, though. So, I get off the phone with Joe, and proceed to the city where of course I and he hung out and played some video games and slightly lost track of time. We left, and thanks to the time of year, it was already dark. It was maybe around 6:30 to 7. When we got back to my place and it had begun sprinkling rain on the ride up. But we get there with no problem. We go in and start setting up the game stations to begin the night of games and movies, typical stuff we often did. It is around 10 when we have everything set up and the slight rain had subsided, so we open the window to cool the room. The backyard is dark, and I mean dark. And it leads straight into the woods beside the small shack in my yard. But it never bothered us as we were halfway through our movie, when I and Joe both heard a faint metallic-like sound coming from the woods. It caused me and Joe to pause the movie and ask if we both heard the same thing. I said I had, so we listened for a moment, and we heard it again. This time, though, it sounded closer. It was so windy, so we blamed it on the wind, and plus, we have a tin roof, but we resumed the movie and kind of forgot about it. About 30 minutes later, we hear this sound again, but once again, it is much louder than the last. It sounded like someone hitting a metal baseball bat against a tree. So I paused the movie again, and I and Joe looked at each other. We decided to stay quiet and turn the lights down and take a look out the window. We saw nothing, but kept hearing it move around the woods, so to speak. We started getting a little freaked out, but turned the movie back on and lowered the volume, mostly as a ploy to act as if we were ignoring it. But really, we were listening intently to the outside noises, and the sound quickly stopped. They now transitioned to the side of my house, just under the opened window. We froze and for what felt like 5 minutes just stared at the window, seeing nothing but the darkness and slight glow of the floodlight coming from the side of the house. Soon, we saw a shadow in the light. Then all at once, the light shook and went out. We turned and ran into the front room and grabbed a light and anything we could use as a non-lethal weapon and bolted outside to the area from which the sound was coming from. It was coming from just under the window. But there was nothing. No sound, no light, but my floodlight was unscrewed and on my porch, which really freaked us out. So I quickly put the light back up, and we had a brief look around when it began raining pretty hard. We stopped our search and concluded that whoever or whatever unscrewed that light was gone. We assumed it did not want to stay in the rain, as we did not either. We got back inside, still thinking about what had just happened. As I went to look out the window, I saw what looked like a man standing in the dark looking at me from behind the shack in my yard. I was scared, I would not lie, but I kept talking to Joe as if I did not see him. I walked over to my desk and I calmly took out my 9mm handgun. I had used this for home protection due to previous incidents that we had had. I stowed it in my lap and hoped that whoever was outside would leave. It seemed that for another hour or so that the guy was gone, but we heard loud footsteps on my porch near the floodlight, then a series of loud banging on my wall right next to where we were sitting. I stood up and cocked my handgun. When I saw the outside light go out again, I moved to the window and shoved nearly my whole upper body out of the window and fired at least 7 shots right under the outside of the light, and I saw the man run into the woods wildly off into the dark again. Silence and darkness crept over us again the remainder of the night. We kept the lights on and the window shut, and nothing else happened. All has been quiet since. This story takes place 1 year ago when I lived in the backwoods of Georgia. I now live in Wyoming. It is much better here. My name is Patrick. I'm 17 now, but when this happened, I was 16, and this is hard for me to write because it still scares the crap out of me to this day. So, I and my friends Mark, CJ, and Chelsea were going to spend the night together because my brother was at his friend's house and my mom and dad were going to be out of town for the next week. I must note I was 16, Mark was 15, Chelsea was also 16, and CJ was 17. He had his license, and I believe he was the only one out of the group to have it. Because I was living in the backwoods, CJ drove Mark and Chelsea to my house. The first 3 hours were normal. We watched movies, played some PS4 games, and I browsed Netflix until midnight. It was at that point, for at least an hour, we were browsing the r/paranormal subreddit. Mark is a believer, and so am I. Chelsea is too, but I think CJ was more of a skeptic, but we still liked him as he was cool. He is like a more punk rock version of Tom Cruise, and I saved Tom Cruise because he was short, about 5'4". Mark is 5'6", Chelsea is 4'10", and I'm 6'4". I am the tallest. My dad is a Marine. He is a beast at 70, and he is 6'4". I got my height from my dad. Had I not been the tallest and strongest of my friends, I would not be alive today. Here is why. We were sitting there out of nowhere. My dog starts going absolutely nuts. I grabbed my dad's shotgun because my house was on a back road of a back road. The closest other person is probably 5 miles away or more. And my property had no trespassing signs and private property signs all over it. So I looked outside and see nothing. Then I hear a sound that sends chills down my spine even as I write this. I said, "What the heck is that?" CJ comes running outside. I hand him my mom's pistol, and just as we are ready to walk back in the house, I see something run into the woods. Me and CJ run after it, with our guns. We have our flashlights at the ready as well. We run for about 15 minutes. Then CJ goes, "Shh, quiet." Then he points at something. It takes me a minute to see what it is. That's when I see it. I open fire and then CJ starts shooting as well. I stop and tell him to stop soon after. We hear a scream coming from the house. Me and CJ sprint back to the house as we hear that god-awful sound again. CJ and I run into the back door. We find Mark and Chelsea in the corner of the room. Chelsea is hysterical and crying and said, "What was that?" We all had a look of shock on our faces, and then I looked at my dog. Sarah is a 10-year-old black lab. She's the best dog ever. I saw her hiding behind my dad's chair. There were 3 long, deep claw marks along her side. We all spent the rest of the night in my upstairs bedroom with all the doors locked. When the sun came up, we went outside with my dad's shotgun and searched the backyard. I found 2 large footprints where I saw the thing run into the woods. I told CJ and Mark, but not Chelsea. I stayed at CJ's place for the next couple of days. Then Mom and Dad came home after dinner. When I and Dad were talking in the living room, I told him about what happened. He said I probably saw a Wendigo. Mark just told me that he had stage 4 cancer. He only has 6 months, so I figured I would share this story. Chelsea and I have been dating for a while now. Next year we turn 18. I plan on asking her to marry me, and I want a big family and lots of kids, but I can't never forget that night. It will be with me until the day I die.
Hi there. I have a story that happened to me in Bristol, Virginia. I was around 6 years old, and we lived in a house built in the early 1970s. The house layout was quite simple. When you stepped inside, you walked straight into a large living room and kitchen area. My parents' bedroom and my little brother's room were to the left. To the right was a long hallway. On the left side was the bathroom, and on the right was the basement door. At the end of the hallway, my bedroom was on the left, and across from it was an empty room. Now that you know the layout, I can tell you just what happened. One night, I had my bedroom door open while I was comfortably in bed, in a rather deep sleep. Suddenly, I woke up with the overwhelming feeling that I was being watched from the empty space in my room. The air around me felt entirely too cold. It was freezing. But at this point in the year, it was rather warm. So, this didn't make any sense. A heavy dread filled the space. But as quickly as it came, the feeling vanished, and I eventually went back to sleep. The following day, my parents left to go to the store, taking my little brother with them, leaving me alone in the house. I was playing on my bed when the dreadful feeling returned. I turned to look at the empty space again, and there he was. A man dressed in what looked like a Civil War uniform stood there, staring at me. When our eyes met, he suddenly started running toward me, and then he vanished into thin air. I was screaming out of fear. When my parents finally came home, I told them what had happened, but they brushed it off, saying it was probably nothing, just my imagination, it's an old house, you know. But ever since that night, I have continued to see him. Even years later, after moving out, I still see him standing there at the end of my bed every now and then. It feels good to finally share it because it's something that has haunted me my entire life.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Since I was about 16, I've had several amazing encounters with deer. The very first encounter happened when I was 16, attending summer camp in upstate New York as a JROTC cadet. A friend and I were descending a steep trail away from the group to refill our canteens. Suddenly, my friend had pointed out a solitary fawn nibbling along the trail's grass. It indeed resembled Bambi. Once he pointed it out, it looked up and sprinted toward me. I crouched down and gathered a handful of grass. It nibbled the grass from my hand, then came within 4 inches of my face, sniffing around before quickly darting back into the woods. Encounter 2. At age 20, I was hanging out in the woods of southern New Jersey with my brother. We spent our childhood exploring these woods and were well acquainted with them. Yet, on this occasion, we lingered longer than intended. We lost track of time. A darkness quickly enveloped the area. An uneasy sensation crept as we made our way along the trails. Confusion set in as we struggled to regain our bearings, leading to rising concern. The woods grew silent, and the wind began to whip around us. At that point, my brother and I knew that something was off and that we had to get out of the woods as fast as possible. And that's when we saw numerous deer surrounding us, so many of them. We only noticed them when a handful moved out of their buck's way. The buck walked toward us. It was enormous. From what I could see, it was between a 10 to 12 point buck. I was nervous that the buck would charge us, perceiving us as a threat, but it walked right up to us, so close that I could have touched it. It just looked at us for a minute, then turned around, walked about 10 feet down the trail, stopped, and turned its head back at us. My brother and I felt that it wanted us to follow it, so we started walking with it. There we were, walking with this giant buck between us. Meanwhile, the rest of his herd walked along just off the trail on each side. After about 15 minutes, we saw the entrance to the woods. We left the woods and turned to see the buck standing at the trail's edge. It just nodded, then turned around and headed back into the woods, with his head following closely behind. Positively, it was my strangest but most remarkable encounter with wildlife, not just with deer. My brother and I have rarely spoken about it, but were confident that Buck and his heart protected and escorted us away from a potentially dangerous situation. Encounter 3. This one just happened a few days ago, actually, which reminded me of my previous experiences with deer. I'm 28 now, so it's been years since the last encounter, and I live in Mississippi. I was walking my dog around midnight in my backyard, which borders the small forest. We were right by the edge of the woods when I heard an owl hooting. I shined my flashlight in the direction that I heard the owl, and I saw two white deer just standing there. I thought, wow, I've never seen an all-white deer, and I'm looking at two. What was also interesting was that my dog always reacts when she spots another animal. She'll whine, bark, and bolt toward it, but not this time. Instead, she just stared at them, just like I was. After a good minute of staring, I returned to walking my dog.
I'm not sure how to tell this story, but no matter how strange it sounds, it is true. A couple of years ago, my cousin Jennifer and I were sitting on the front porch, just talking and minding our own business, when my husband stepped outside. "Do you hear that?" he said in a low voice. Jennifer and I immediately went silent and listened. Our front yard sat across a dirt road from the railroad tracks. People walked on them often, and a stretch of woods was between the tracks and our house. A small trail led from our yard up to the tracks. Who is that?" Jennifer asked softly. I never took my eyes off the woods. Even though the wind was howling that night, we could hear someone talking, almost muttering. My husband grabbed a flashlight, and the dogs, who oddly enough weren't barking but just staring in that direction, he started heading up toward the tracks. "Don't be stupid, come back," I yelled after him. But of course, he never listens to me. Jennifer and I sat in a tense silence as time passed. 30 minutes would go by, and there was still no sign of Richard, my husband. There was no answer when I called out for him, and at this point, I was worried. "Let's go," I told Jennifer. She turned and stared at me like I had lost my mind. "Are you high?" she said. "Let's go," I repeated, already walking toward the tracks. Now, I'm not scared of much, and don't believe in all that ghost mumbo-jumbo. Demons? That's a different story. But ghosts? Nah. So up the tracks we went, the wind still howling at about 30 miles per hour, forcing us to yell just to hear each other. "Jennifer, do you see him?" I shouted. "No," she yelled back. There was no moon, no light, just total darkness and wind. Then, out of nowhere, Jennifer screamed, "Look, there he is!" We saw a light just up ahead, about a football field away. "Oh, thank God," I sighed in relief. But just as I said that, the light started fading, and fading, until poof, just disappeared. What is he doing?" I muttered to myself. Jennifer and I started yelling, "Richard!" No answer, just the wind. Then suddenly, the light popped back on, but this time it was much closer. Jennifer kept screaming his name. By now, panic was setting in. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up. The light started fading again, dimmer, dimmer, then poof, gone. "What the hell?" Jennifer screamed. "What is that?" "I don't know," I shouted back. We stood frozen, staring down the track. Then it popped on again. This time it was almost right on top of us. Jennifer screamed, "Run!" We ran as fast as we could. I knew that if it reappeared again, it would be right there with us. We just took off as fast as we could, running straight for the house, panicked, screaming, absolutely losing our wits. Where was Richard? We sat down, breathless and terrified, trying to make sense of what had just happened to us. About 20 minutes had passed before Jennifer spoke. "You have to call the police. Where is Richard?" I was still shaken, but I reached for the phone. Before I could dial, the front door suddenly flew open. Jennifer and I nearly jumped out of our skin. There stood Richard. "Where in Sam's snot were you?" I screamed. "Was that you on the track?" Jennifer yelled. Richard looked completely confused. No, he said slowly. "I was way down the track, past the bend about a mile away." I snatched the flashlight from his hand and tried to get it to fade out the way we had seen before. But no matter what we did, it just wouldn't do the same thing.
To this day, we have no idea what that was, but later I thought it could have been Richard. But if it had been, the dogs would have run to him, right? And if someone had been running that fast to gain ground on us and flash out the flashlight and then have it come back on or whatever was going on, we would have heard rocks crunching under their feet. Maybe someone out there can tell us what we saw that night.
Has anyone else ever had an experience with performing this ritual? I came across it by sheer coincidence and was wondering if anyone had found a way to escape the loop. If you're unfamiliar with the Stone Gate ritual, I'll do my best to fill you in. You might have passed right by the ritual several times, and just never paid any mind to it. It's fairly easy to spot, if you know what you're looking for, though. You can't force it to happen. Either you'll happen to find a gate in your path, or you might just go your whole life without seeing one. The word gate is a little misleading, though, as all there really is to it is two stones. As you walk around, just anywhere will do, I've come to find, you may notice two stones on either side of your path. These stones will be oval and fairly flat in shape. Their colors will be similar but different enough to be distinct from one another. It doesn't matter if you're on the sidewalk or a hiking trail. The stone gate can appear anywhere. When you spot these stones and wish to not partake in the ritual, you can simply pass right through them and suffer no consequences. On the other hand, if you do decide to involve yourself with the gate as I did, then you can never stop. Standing in the middle of your path, there will be a stone on either side of you. All you need to do to begin the ritual is choose which stone to pick up. It will be random each time, but these stones each have their own effect. One will grant you good luck if you are still holding it at the end of the ritual, and the other will give you bad luck if you aren't holding it at the end. As I said, I happened to cross this ritual by happenstance. I like to go jogging in the nearby woods. I try to make time for it every morning. It's how I justify all the garbage I shove down my throat. While I had just turned around to start heading back home, I stopped for a moment to have a drink. My eyes focused on the trail ahead, one I had run countless times before. I noticed a pair of rocks resting across from each other. Feeling cool streams of water traveling down my cheek after escaping the corners of my mouth, I pondered about the rocks. I wondered how many times I had passed by and failed to notice them, or if they had recently been placed there. They seemed far too picturesque to be an accident. The way the sun bounced off each rock causing them to look like headlights. The more I stood and stared at the set of rocks, the more transfixed I became on their sudden existence. Lowering the water bottle, I stepped forward with a sense of caution that can only come from ancestral uncertainty. With each step, the appearance of the rocks became more abnormal. Drawing closer, I came to the conclusion that they arrived recently. Sitting perfectly on each side of the dirt path, undisturbed by anything, and without a speck of dirt on either of them. One was a solid gray while the other shimmered with lighter tones under the morning rays. Kneeling, I ran my fingers across the surface of the right side rock, feeling its smooth and uninterrupted surface. A surface that was surprisingly cool to the touch. Surely, if it had been resting long enough in the sunlight, it would soak some warmth in, but the thing was nearly frigid. I didn't want to interrupt the symmetry, but the rock had such a pristine presentation, I could help but wrap my fingers around it and lift it from the ground. Only the underside of the rock was sullied by fractional clumps of dirt clinging on. With a swipe, my fingers knocked the rolling grains of grime back to the ground. Twisting my wrist around, I observed the nearly hypnotic surface of the rock, it catching ever so gently in the beams peeking through the sparse trees. I'm not the see-a-cool-thing-and-collect-it kind of guy, but even so, I couldn't help but think the rock would be beautiful resting on a shelf, even more so if I had both of them, so I turned to face the other rock only to discover it was gone. Curiously, I swiveled my head, feeling a wave of static run along my body, prickling my arm hairs as I search for the other rock. They were so perfectly adjacent from each other that it should have been right behind me, but it wasn't. The forest was pretty quiet in the morning hours, and I heard nothing skittering behind me. Even if there was something, why take the rock? Stepping in the direction of where the other rock should have been, my eye was flooded with a white light. Raising my arm to shield my eyes, I peered further down the trail leading back home, and there it was, reflecting the light into my eyes, almost as if it was beckoning me, was the other smooth rock resting on the left side of the path. Even though it was around 40 or so feet away, the way it bounced the light where it was resting, it was unmistakably the same stone from before. As a lighthouse can lead a ship to land, I started pacing my way down the trail. My vision was so fixated on the other stone that I foolishly ignored the light trickling into my pupil. Without knowing what I was in the middle of, that I had already thrown myself into the stone gate ritual, I couldn't have noticed it right away. With every step, the rock that my fingers were still clutched around was becoming heavier. I first really felt its effect once my angled elbow became straight and my hand hanging down at my side. Stopping in place, finally free from the siren call of the stone still ahead of me, I was able to observe my surroundings better. More than just the aching that was starting to develop in my shoulder, I noticed the forest around me was shifting, or rather, it was becoming bleached. The color of the once firmly brown soil that made up the path I traversed was becoming flushed and dull. Green leaves were losing their vibrancy, and the tree bark was becoming a milky shade of what they once were, as if all the colors around me were being washed away. I took a few steps forward, this time keeping an eye on the world around me. Indeed, with each step, I lost a little more of what made the world around me so beautiful. More and more stark black outlines were becoming more apparent, not to mention my grip on the stone in my hand was starting to loosen. Just as the world was washing away, each step made the stone I was holding heavier. My grip was failing, and finger strength was giving away. A few more steps was all it would take for the rock to fall from my hand. When the thought of dropping the rock where I stood crossed my mind, I was filled with an unrivaled sense of dread. Telling my fingers to just drop the stone felt like trying to pass through a solid brick wall. Some part of me, some firing synapses, knew my safety was only assured if I continued to hold the stone. Some part of me knew the stones were a pair that needed to exist across from each other. I had already made it about halfway. If one arm had the strength to carry it that far, then two should have been enough to make it the rest of the way. There's no explanation to why I knew, but I did, that all I could do was keep moving forward. The weight of the stone, ever increasing each step, became harder to perform, as I was already halfway, but the half I still had left was going to take much longer. Even still, the brown dirt faded into a hazy gray, and the foliage lost all luster as the stone grew nearly unbearable. Then, another wave of static shuddered through my body, the feeling of being watched. Such a small stone at that point had accumulated a weight that must have exceeded my own body. Even with both hands cupping it and all my muscles working in tandem, I could feel my knees buckling. It became tough to focus on anything other than fighting it. I did manage to catch several glances, though. As the color of the world had nearly vanished altogether, all that remained was the thick black outlines of trees and foliage. These outlines began to squirm. It wasn't as if they were being pushed by a harsh wind. They were waving back and forth. It reminded me of those crazy straws than they did tall, proud trees. My knees were burning, and my back felt as though it was bound to snap, but my destination was within reach. Surroundings up until that point were mute, but as I got closer to the other rock, I heard a hungry chorus of howls perforate the air. The squirming lines beginning to stick together, creating thicker streaks of black. Gritting my teeth and with the backs of my cupped hands landing on the bleached soil, I dragged myself along. The weight of the rock at this point was too much for my hands. If the weight wasn't shared between both palms, I would no doubt have broken both bones. If I had to travel just a few more feet, I don't think I would have had enough strength. With one last heave, I pulled my hands across the ground, feeling the specks of dirt digging in and ripping my skin, and I offered the world one last glance. So many of the lines had come together, forming one. It was just a jagged line, jutting out in all directions from a central point that had so much girth to it, more girth than any tree had ever seen. My feeling of being watched was caused by it. Somehow I knew that thing was looking. And then, it was gone. All of it had vanished. The forest around me flooded with colors and a vibrancy that seemed more intense than ever before. A crushing weight that took my entire body to move a mere inches was once again relegated to the expected weight of just a small stone. A small smooth rock resting in the palm of my hand, on the side of the path, adjacent to the other rock. I slipped the stone from my palm and placed it gently into the soil. Despite the throbbing in my hand and the burning throughout my body, everything had returned to normal. Things had become better than normal. Upon returning to work that day, I discovered that I was being considered for a promotion that month and had gotten it. The pay raise was nice, and when I went to celebrate, I ended up striking up a conversation with a very lovely, very drunk woman who slipped me her number. Everything after that trip to the woods had been coming up roses. I was on top of the world. Things just kept improving. That is, until I saw the rocks again. I had stopped going for so many runs, but still walked to work, to keep some semblance of exercise. Stopping dead in my tracks, I begrudgingly noticed the two pristine rocks that were laying on either side of my path. Refusing to go through all that again, I just stepped past the rocks without so much offering a second glance. It's not that my life went to crap after that or anything, but I could tell that things had stagnated, that I was no longer rising. I had plateaued. After you participate in the ritual once, you'll begin to see the gates everywhere, and try to do what I did, and just ignore them. However, every time you step through, without picking up one, your world will shift. A slow and almost invisible change at first, but each time I passed through or avoided a gate without picking up a stone, my world would lose a little color. Around a week of avoiding the gates was enough to notice the change, and within another week, the feeling of being watched returned. Fearing what would happen next, if whatever that was watched me for too long, I decided to pick up the rock the next time I saw a gate. The next time I picked up the rock, the ritual progressed as normal. Only instead of the rock getting heavier, it became lighter. Like the stone was being pumped with helium, it would begin to try and pull my hand upwards. I thought it would be easier to fight the rock getting heavier, but near the end of the ritual, it became difficult to keep my feet on the ground. That's when the rock slipped from my hand. I dropped to the ground and watched the small rock spiral away from me and into the pure white sky above. I was so close and still, it slipped away from me. That thing, as the seconds went on, moved closer and closer. When I tried to get up and run, I smacked into a wall. I couldn't see anything though, as it was all white and I had no idea where I was anymore. As the undefined line got close enough to touch me, I hear the pitter of something hitting the ground and the ritual ended. I thought I had gotten lucky, but I was wrong. I already explained the rules, so you should have already guessed, but my life fell into disarray. I lost my job, an unfaithful wife, and missed payments. It all came down on me. It would continue until I picked the correct rock and dragged it to the end. That's the game you play when you take part. A life of extreme highs and lows. The more rituals I complete, the more often I'll come across a gate, and it's so exhausting. Not sure how much longer I can keep up with it. Even when I receive the good luck, I can't enjoy it. I know it'll be taken away. Even more than I know now. Even without performing the ritual, even if I get the correct rock every time, It's watching me, waiting for me to break down and give in. It's waiting for me to pass through the stone gate. One final time.
I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.